Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. 60 million families have started receiving monthly direct payments of up to $300 per child as part of the expanded child tax credit. Democrats voted to expand the child tax credit earlier this year as part of the $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill. Not one Republican voted for that bill. Families can receive up to $3,600 a year for children under six and $3,000 a year for kids ages 6 to 17. Single parents earning up to $75,000 and married couples earning up to $150,000 are eligible. On today's Your Call, we are talking about how this will affect children and their families. More than 10 million children in the U.S. lived below the federal poverty line in 2019, according to the U.S. Census. 4 in 10 children in the U.S. live in households that struggle to afford the basics. California has the highest child poverty rate in the country. Almost 8 million families in California are eligible to receive this money. Now, families that filed taxes in 2019 and 2020 are automatically enrolled. If you did not file taxes, you can sign up for the child tax credit on the IRS website. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio is asking the IRS to make its site mobile friendly and to add additional languages. Right now, it's only available in English. Children of undocumented parents can also qualify under two requirements. According to CalMatters, the child must have a social security number issued before May 17th of this year, and undocumented parents or guardians must have an individual taxpayer identification number. Half of the money will be sent out in monthly payments for the rest of this year. The second half will be sent out next April after families file their taxes. And then it's over. Democrats and a number of organizations are calling on Congress to make the child tax cut credit permanent. This is also really important. The IRS is warning people to look out for phone, email, social media, and text message scams about this credit. The IRS says it does not contact taxpayers to request any information. So if you get a text or a phone message saying we need information in order for you to get the child tax credit, do not return that text or that phone call. Joining us to talk about the child tax credit is Christopher Weimer, co-director of the Center on Poverty and Social Policy at the Columbia University School of Social Work. Christopher conducts research on the measurement of poverty, historical trends in poverty, and the impacts of social policies on the poverty rate. Hi, Christopher. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. The expansion of this child tax credit has really shined a light on child poverty in this country. I mean, these are the official numbers. More than 10 million children in the U.S. live below the federal poverty line in 2019. So give us a sense of how child poverty has really changed over the years.
So child poverty has actually come down quite a bit over the years, although the United States has always sort of stood in international comparison as having an exceptionally high child poverty rate. Some of our work here at Columbia has adopted, you know, a better poverty measure than the federal government releases every year. And we found that rather than sort of going up and down every year with the wider economy, we've actually made slow but steady progress against child poverty, although, as you mentioned in the intro, child poverty rates today are much higher than one would want or imagine.
Right. Now, the child tax credit was first introduced in 1997 as part of the Taxpayer Relief Act. And your colleague, CPSP co-director Erwin Garfinkel, said the poorest third of children in the U.S. got a smaller tax credit than everyone else. And the poorest 10% of children got nothing. And this finally changes that. Why has it taken so long?
I think the past 25 years have seen like a real change in the nature of provision of income support for families with children, starting back to the welfare reforms of 1996. The whole federal safety net sort of changed, focused more on not providing direct assistance to families with children, but really trying to sort of punish families, you know, enforce people entering the labor market in order to qualify for benefits. And, you know, that works well and good for families who are able to maintain a certain amount of labor force participation and work effort. But sort of left behind in that are families who aren't able to make or earn as much money in order to qualify for these full tax benefits, which have become a more integral part of the safety net for families with children. So it's kind of how we deliver support for families with children these days is largely through the tax system, as well as through sort of a patchwork of other programs like food stamps and housing subsidies. And so the history of the child tax credit is that it takes quite a bit of earnings in order to qualify for that full benefit. And so we at the Center on Poverty and Social Policy have found that, like you said, it's about a third of children who don't qualify for that full benefit. And not all of those third of children obviously have parents who aren't working. It's just that their earnings are too little to qualify for that full benefit. So what the reform that was embodied in the stimulus bill, the American Rescue Plan, earlier this year, is to really try to equalize that, as well as to enhance the value of the child tax credit. So now for the first time, all that those third of children will receive the full benefit, as you said, as long as they're incorporated and entered into the income tax system.
So one of the biggest changes here is that this is finally available to those with the lowest incomes. According to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, 27 million children did not previously receive the full tax credit because their families were too poor to qualify, which, just to be frank, it sounds so backwards. I mean, who needs this money the most? People with the least. So, you know, to think that this didn't help poor families and also single parents were hit hard. And here we are in 2021, and finally, these families are now eligible.
Yeah, on the one hand, like you said, it's tragic. I mean, these are the families that need it most. These are the kids that need it most. You know, the child tax credit was created sort of recognizing the fact that raising children and accomplishing one's goals as a parent for one's kids is a costly endeavor, you know, paying for education, paying for school supplies, paying for the basics, basic needs, food, you know, shelter, housing, clothes for the kids, et cetera. And so historically we've, you know, made that conditional and only given it to certain families with certain incomes. But raising a child and providing for a child is, you know, a cost that's universal for families with children. And this reform, you know, attempts to acknowledge that and correct for that.
The other major change is that children of undocumented parents can also qualify if the child has a social security number issued before May 17th of this year, and undocumented parents or guardians have an ITIN number.
That's correct. Yeah. And so what this really embodies, I think, is a message from the federal government that the social safety net is designed. We want to make sure that if you're a family raising a child, that child shouldn't suffer. That child shouldn't be poor. And we want to provide a social safety net. The another thing that we always point out at the center here is that, you know, having low income is not a permanent characteristic. Incomes change all the time. People's situation, their employment situation changes all the time. You know, the COVID pandemic put this into pretty stark relief, right? And so, you know, making sure that there's a floor on children's income and a steady source of income that parents can rely on as they go about trying to raise their children, make sure that that income volatility that's become sort of all too common in recent years, you know, doesn't wind up affecting children and harming children too much. And that includes the children of undocumented families, like you say.
Also, families are going to receive a monthly payment through the end of the year, and then the second half will be sent out next April. I've read that some families are opting not to get monthly payments because they still want it in one chunk. But other than that, it's important to also say that this is really a no strings attached payment, right?
Yes, people can spend it the way that they choose as best for their family. You know, we do have research on how families spend these benefits. It tends to go toward the things you would expect. You know, first, some of the basics, food, housing, clothes, et cetera, investing in things for the child, like I said, school supplies, Childcare is a big one, obviously, and a major expense for families with children. And then some families may use it to, you know, pay down some debt or pay some back bills. Very little of it goes to, you know, things that, you know, sometimes you'll hear people fretting about or worrying about, you know, taking it out in a casino or something like that. You know, this is a benefit geared toward children, and research sort of shows that when families receive a benefit geared for their children, they spend it on their children and the things their family needs. So, but yes, there's no requirement that they have to spend it on X or Y.
Right. And there's no concern about having to pay this back unless a salary changes.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple situations where, you know, families want to be cognizant and, you know, there are ways to go and correct information if information has changed. But in your introduction, you mentioned that it's really not till single parents, their earnings go over around $75,000, or for married parents over $150,000, that the benefit starts to taper off. And it, you know, it doesn't go to zero, obviously. It just begins to become smaller and phase out as earnings rise. So, you know, if your earnings went from $70,000 to $80,000, you know, you might be getting a higher benefit than you wind up qualifying for, but it's not going to be dramatic. And you know, for the vast majority of families under those income levels, changes in their income won't matter all that much. I think one thing that may matter for some families is if you have sort of complicated custodial arrangements with another parent. And so one example I've heard about is if, you know, one parent claims the child in 1 year and the other parent claims the child in the second year, you just want to be real cognizant because the payments will start to go to the family that was claiming in the most recent tax year. So you want to, like, make sure that the payments are being made according to, you know, what you want. So for families with those complicated situations, which are, you know, a smaller percentage of families, you know, making sure that you talk to a tax preparer, whether a nonprofit tax preparer or whoever, you know, there's lots of assistance out there to help with that.
Yeah, and I've found a number of really great articles, just a basic FYI, what you should know about the child tax credit, especially if you are maybe have different responsibilities with another parent. It's really important to get that information. And also, I just want to repeat this again, the IRS is warning people to look out for various scams about this child tax credit. The IRS says it will not contact you under any circumstances to request information, so be sure not to respond to any of those messages. Today, we're joined by Christopher Weimer, co-director of the Center on Poverty and Social Policy at the Columbia University School of Social Work. And today we're talking about the child tax credit. 60 million families have started receiving monthly direct payments of up to $300 per child as part of this expanded child tax credit. If you have any questions or comments, if you started to receive this, what difference will it make? How are you planning to use this? I also think it says a lot that $300 a month per child, the fact that this can make such a big difference just really shows us the struggle that people are facing in this country. And according to Brookings, we've talked about this before on the show, 53 million people, 44% of all workers earn low hourly wages, about $24,000 a year. So if you have any questions or comments on this, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org, or you can tweet us at yourcallradio. What about that, Christopher? Obviously, it's fantastic that this has been expanded, but when you really think about it, $3,600 a year for a child under six, or $3,000 a year for kids 6 to 17, the fact that this is going to make such a big difference really says a lot about how people are really struggling out there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's families have been struggling for a long time. We've had a massive rise in income inequality and a rise in income insecurity, especially for those making lower earnings in the labor market. You know, the minimum wage has sort of stagnated over time in real terms. You know, some states have higher minimum wages than the federal minimum wage, but a lot of people struggle with, you know, sporadic work, insecure work, low wages, absence of benefits. And so a lot of families struggle with just the absence of cash to meet some of those routine expenses, but also when an emergency pops up, the flat tire on the car or an unexpected medical expense. And so, and I think you're even going to talk later in the program about the important problem of increasing unaffordability of housing.
Right.
Families are really in a crunch. And even though, you know, for some folks, $3,600 might not sound game changing, I think for families who are living on the margin and living on the edges, it'll make a huge difference.
Yeah, I remember reading a piece in the New York Times about the additional unemployment benefits, and they profiled a woman who works at a gas station. And she said for the first time ever, she was able to take her son out to lunch and actually buy him a new pair of shoes and a new toy, which she doesn't ever get to do. And it just kind of hit me thinking an extra $300 a week has made such a difference in this woman's life because she makes so little working at this gas station. And that's the case for so many people across the country.
Yeah, and it's kind of a choice. I mean, it's kind of a nightmarish choice that a lot of parents have to make. I remember doing an interview with one woman actually in San Francisco where, you know, halfway through the interview, we were talking about, you know, paying bills and utilities. And she sort of stopped the interview and realized, oh my gosh, I need to go put, you know, at least $10 or $20 on my utility bill so it doesn't get cut off. And choosing between that and buying, you know, a toy for your child or, you know, being able to send your child on the school field trip. I mean, who would want to make that choice? So giving parents a little cushion, I think, will obviously help families stretch a dollar, but also allow families to invest in their children. And, you know, research suggests that investment pays off down the road in terms of, you know, children being better off, being healthier, doing better in school, eventually doing better with long-term education and even job prospects. So that's another aspect that we're looking at here at the center.
This is so important. The research that you all have done at the center, looking at food stamps and the earned income tax credit, finds that these programs reduced low birth weight and neonatal mortality. And as you say, they increased health and the well-being of the children that continues well into adulthood. They live longer, they're healthier, they get more education, which results in just an overall better life. They earn more income. I mean, the research is there.
Yeah, and it's crystal clear. I mean, often as a researcher, you'll wade into an area and you'll say, oh, well, you know, one study says this, you know, another study says that. We've undertaken sort of a systematic review of the, you know, the causal effects of income on kids' life chances, their outcomes, their health, all the things you just mentioned. And the research base is pretty unequivocal. I mean, there's virtually no studies with, you know, negative effects or even zero effects. The improvements and when you tally it all up, essentially, we find that for every $1 you spend investing in, you know, income support for kids, it would result in returns of about $8 or more. And that's pretty striking. I mean, it just shows the power that income, especially for those at the very who are struggling with periods of low income, how much of a difference that can make for their kids.
And also, according to your research, if this is made permanent, it'll cost about $100 billion a year.
That's correct, yeah.
And it'll generate benefits of over $800 billion a year.
That's correct, yeah. I mean, some of these, some of those returns are obviously built into sort of the long-term potential for kids. It's not like a year-to-year thing exactly, but it's an investment for society is, I guess, the way we look at it. So investing in children is a big win, not just for the kids themselves, but for society at large.
What is the government and nonprofits like yours doing to ensure that people know about this? Because some of the poorest families in the United States don't make enough to file taxes, and so they have missed out. And I mean, I've read articles saying if you don't file taxes, you can go to the IRS website to ensure that you get this payment. But what is being done to get that message out there?
Essentially, a lot of outreach. Those are the families. So we talked about the third of kids who historically have not received that maximum benefit. A lot of those kids are automatically going to get the maximum benefit. The kids that a lot of people are worrying about most are those who are sort of most disconnected from the tax system, but also other, you know, other systems out there. So think about children and families experiencing a spell of homelessness, for example. That family is probably not required to file taxes, may not be in the system, may move a lot. So a lot of groups are trying to do outreach right now to make sure that those families know about their eligibility for the benefit and also to help them enroll. There's this, the website, the portal that you mentioned in the intro, childtaxcredit.gov. It does have some glitches and some problems. I won't lie about that, but it's being improved every day. And there's a lot of people on the ground in high poverty neighborhoods or working to find those families who are most disconnected and most likely to be non-filers. Some things that, or one thing that I found interesting to take note is, you know, we've had a round of a few stimulus payments since the onset of the COVID pandemic. And, you know, if you enroll in the child tax credit and receive that, you'll not only receive that $300 or $250 per month, depending on the age of your child, but you'd also be eligible to receive any back stimulus payments that you missed. So this is really important and critical for all families to get their kids enrolled if they're eligible. And it's those kids who are most struggling or whose families are most struggling, I think, who are most likely to benefit from the program.
Yeah. So again, it's so important to spread the word. If you did not file taxes, you can sign up for this tax credit on the IRS website. And again, Senator Sherrod Brown is asking the IRS to make the site cell phone friendly and to add additional languages. Children of undocumented parents also qualify if the child has a social security number issued before May 17th of this year and an undocumented parent or guardian has an ITIN number. Let's talk about what it will take to make this permanent. A number of Democrats are calling on Congress to make this permanent, especially Representative Rosa DeLauro, who's been fighting to make this credit available to poor children for such a long time. What are you hearing in D.C. about what it will take to make this tax credit permanent?
I mean, honestly, it's going to take, it is included in the latest unveiled proposal, not the hard infrastructure proposal with, but the second proposal, and it is included there. So a lot of it will depend on the passage of that. I believe what's included there would be to extend it for, I think, till at least 2025. I might have the exact year wrong, but essentially a movement to try to extend this and make it permanent, which for, I mean, it'll have big impacts just, you know, for 1 year, that's for sure. It'll definitely help families and definitely improve outcomes for children. But for this to be a lasting source of and an investment for children, then that permanency is really going to be critical. And it'll take that political will on the part of the Senate and the House of Representatives to make sure that this stays in the legislation and becomes, you know, so that the families getting it right now essentially don't face a tax hike come January 2022.
Christopher, before we let you go, what other changes would you like to see that would tackle childhood poverty? Of course, living wages should be at the top of the list, given that almost half of the country make about $10.22 an hour, which is $24,000 a year.
Yeah, I think that's a big one, making sure that work actually pays a living wage so that you know, families might need a benefit like we've been talking about less. So that's critical, and a lot of groups are working on that. And I'd say, just to maybe tee you up, probably for your next guest, is the increasing unaffordability of housing, and the need for actual, you know, material assistance to help people pay for that expense, which is really sort of spiraling away from a lot of families in a lot of places, especially in San Francisco, where you're at.
Well, Christopher, thanks to you and your team for all of the great research you all do, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Christopher Weimer is co-director of the Center on Poverty and Social Policy at the Columbia University School of Social Work. We have been talking about the child tax credit, which has been expanded. About 60 million families have started receiving payments of up to $300 per child. And if you need more information about this, be sure to spread the word. Families that did not file taxes can sign up for this tax credit on the IRS website. Children of undocumented parents can also qualify. And be sure not to respond to any phone calls, text messages, or emails claiming to be from the IRS about this tax credit, the IRS does not contact taxpayers to request information. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Coming up after a break, we will talk about a National Low Income Housing Coalition report that found no one working full-time making the federal minimum wage can afford to rent a two-bedroom apartment anywhere in the U.S. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.